Hey everyone, I'm your host Piers Kicks, and welcome back to Metaverse Musings, which is a research-focused podcast that's part of Delphi Digital. We explore the integral components behind what many believe will be the internet's successor, a virtual extension of the natural world where most of us will eventually live, work, and play. To some, it represents our next great milestone as a network species, and to others, it is something to fear. With our guests, we discuss the technology, philosophy, and culture behind this brave new world. If you're not yet subscribed to the Delphi Research Portal, then I fear for your soul. You're missing out on the most incisive analysis that the digital asset space has to offer. Seriously, check it out. Nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. This podcast features sponsors, and any ads are not an endorsement by Delphi Digital and are for informational purposes only. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Metaverse Musings. Today, I am delighted to introduce you to Justin Bannon, who is the founder and CEO of Boson Protocol, which aims to allow its users to exchange digital value for real-world products, services, or things. Justin, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Piers. Great to be here.
To start us off, could you tell us, as simply as possible, what is Boson Protocol?
So, as simply as possible, Boson Protocol enables the conversion of digital assets or value for real-world items without an intermediary and with minimized human interaction.
Could you give us a quick summary of your personal background leading up to Boson and how that kind of equipped you for what you're doing now?
Sure. I did a physics degree at Imperial College, and somehow I ended up working for a company called Priority Pass, who quite simply sold airport lounge visits using paper and plastic vouchers. I then started doing a master's in digital. I did that pretty early and thought, what happens if we digitize these products and services, create digital vouchers? That turned out to be a pretty good idea because I built that business from a $50 million revenue to a $1 billion revenue digital voucher business. And then, you know, continued my kind of physics of business models, slight obsession, got into the blockchain rabbit hole via kind of business models. And here's this incredible new toolkit for tokenizing business models and creating tokenized network effects, etc. So I did a second master's. And then it was a natural progression, really, to think what happens if we represent real world products and services as these kind of blockchain vouchers.
Amazing, yeah. And so, could you give us a bit more color on kind of how that vision emerged and what the kind of tipping point was for you to actually jump in and start building this?
Yeah, so it was a pretty natural progression to blockchain vouchers, or, you know, representing real world items in a way that could be, in a blockchain native form factor. But early on, there was a really big problem that we came across, which in overcoming has become one of the keystones of Boson Protocol. And that is that although with sort of first generation decentralized commerce platforms like Open Bazaar, etc., although you can represent a real world, you can trade a real world item using a blockchain and eliminate an intermediary, it's when things go wrong, you still need sort of human arbitration to kind of oversee and coordinate the transaction. And so I asked myself, you know, to what degree was this human intervention in the form of arbitrators required, and to what degree could we eliminate or reduce it? And so started looking into the options for using game theory and developed a mechanism which is, you know, to this day kind of largely, the core of that mechanism remains, but it's now being developed by one of the top algorithmic game theorists in the world, Dr. Akaki Mamagaishvili. And so, the core of Boson Protocol is minimizing arbitration using a sequential game that incentivizes buyer and seller to behave fairly.
Super interesting. From what I've read, it seems that
you know, this project more broadly kind of touches upon law, economics, global trade, NFTs, smart contracts, futures, and so much more. What is kind of A, the key innovation that's been unlocked here, and B, the difference of approach that allows you to both form and execute on this vision?
So yeah, the key innovation is definitely this core mechanism that automates the coordination of transactions between a buyer and a seller. So it gives us what we call decentralized autonomous commerce. But also, I think that the second element is the business model innovation, and this is something that I've both studied and practiced for many years, and I think is probably the most disruptive part. So whereas this first generation of decentralized commerce platforms really just put a platform business model onto a blockchain, and that's not massively disruptive, and in that scenario a blockchain is less performant than a centralized system. What we do is really leverage the power of tokenized ecosystems. So instead of a closed platform with transactions that are controlled and governed by a centralized entity, we have this open tokenized ecosystem. So that's basically in the same way that DeFi is not rebuilding banks as monolithic entities on top of a different tech stack, i.e. blockchain. It's about this open token, composable protocols that combine. The same with Boson Protocol, and we heavily leverage Ocean Protocol's architecture and sort of infrastructure design. Whereas Ocean has data tokens, we have thing tokens, so ERC20 tokens that represent real world items, and those ERC20 tokens can then be used to purchase NFT commitment tokens, and these commitment tokens contain all the logic that replaces the intermediary. So I guess those two key innovations are the automation of commerce, and then also a tokenized ecosystem business model to disrupt the platform business model.
Could you just elaborate on that that sort of exchange there, where the ERC20 that can represent kind of anything, it sounded like, gets converted into an ERC721, which has specific attributes? What does that look like?
Okay, so for the first iteration of the protocol, we will have an ERC, we have an ERC721, an NFT, which is actually a stateful NFT that contains this sequential game, into which a buyer will place a payment amount, and then buyer and seller place deposits. And those deposits are then released in accordance with the behavior and the plays of both player, with the objective of ensuring honest behavior by both parties. So you can think of this NFT as, I think of it as a bit like one of those sort of labyrinth mazes that you find on a coffee table, a little wooden maze. So, yes, it's an object, but it's stateful in that, this little ball can roll around in the maze. So that's like the NFT, and that's like this kind of voucher with SLAs and rules built in. But for the first iteration, you can buy that NFT with Boson tokens or ETH, and so that's pretty standard. But for our second phase, you will be able to buy that NFT, that 721, with a specific ERC20 thing token. So this is a token that's minted in order to buy that specific NFT to give you that specific item. So let's say that item is a bicycle, right? So that it will have a specific NFT associated with it, and you'll be able to buy that NFT using a specific ERC20. Now, the beauty of using this ERC20 is that you can go and, for example, use the whole of DeFi and all of that infrastructure to custody, to store, to exchange, but also to do really cool things like price discovery. So you can put that ERC20 on a balancer pool, and you've got what one of our advisors, Michael Zargam, calls generalized unisocks, right? So you've got, you know, you're using a balancer pool for price discovery, but also that balancer pool can then be used for curation and for supply, you know, supply side farming. So if someone believes that this particular item is going to be both popular and high quality, then going and buying those ERC20 early is a signal. It's a form of curation, but also gives the buyer the opportunity to kind of make back on the spread. And then obviously, you know, you're taking that further. Let's suppose that you and I, Piers, decided we were going to build a really cool like hoverboard next year, and we wanted to raise some funds to do that. Well, we could mint these ERC20 Thing tokens now, and we could sell them in advance. And there we have a decentralized Kickstarter, simply leveraging existing DeFi infrastructure. And so, you know, the whole DeFi for free concept, which, you know, again, is just borrowed from Trent and Ocean's work, is just this enormous bonus, because then when we start integrating, so for example, we've signed a partnership with Orion Protocol, and Orion will be both rewarding their users with Boson vouchers for real world items, and also enabling their users to buy direct from the exchange terminal real world items without touching fiat. Suddenly having these ERC20 Thing tokens means that integration, well, there is none really. All that Orion need to do is list another trading pair, and they immediately have this sort of interoperability with Boson.
Really interesting. Now, I assume there's quite a lot of complexity to this, but could you talk us through the kind of various stakeholders in the ecosystem? So sort of on the one side, we've got, you know, a buyer who holds natively digital value in the form of crypto. And on the other hand, we've got a seller looking to sell a physical good for that natively digital value. But in terms of who sits within the protocol, could you give us a quick overview of what that looks like?
Sure. And what I would say as well is we've also assembled an incredible team of ecosystem value flow designers, protocol architects, and also token engineers. So we have Sebnam, who teaches the tokenized ecosystem value flows course for the token engineering community. She heads up our ecosystem design. We've got Sean Anderson, a really accomplished token engineer who's really accomplished with CADCAD and Token Spice, and then we've also got Anish Mohammed as protocol architect, and you know, combined with Trent himself and Michael Zargam as our advisors, you know, we've got this kind of super team kind of working on this. But the key actors in the ecosystem are, as you've mentioned, that there's a buyer who, you know, seeks to you know, give digital value and get a real world item. There's then the seller who, you know, wants to give a real world item and get digital value. We then have an aggregator. An aggregator is a keeper who is incentivized by the protocol to go and find supply that meets the objective function of being, you know, popular and high quality supply. So they are like, when I run the Priority Pass group, we had a sort of distributed set of agents that would go out and find merchants and onboard them, and they would get a percentage. It's really a sort of token incentivized version of those, the aggregators. So really important for bringing on board supply. Then we have resellers that will bring demand to the platform and match supply and demand. And so variants of these resellers will be, for example, some of the NFT marketplaces that we are that we're doing partnerships with. So NFT art marketplaces, for example, will match supply and demand for us on their platform, and not only get the ability to add any of the transaction fees that are normal for their business models, but also directly from the protocol are incentivized as a type of relayer. And then we will also have more custodial resellers. So when we integrate, for example, with centralized exchanges or credit cards or more legacy Web2 businesses, resellers can take custody of the vouchers and within some sort of a Web2 experience. So for example, a centralized exchange, has custody of your cryptocurrencies. It can also take custody of your real world items, and there's a kind of value flow model around that as well. So those are kind of the main ones.
Really, really interesting. Yeah. And then I guess obviously there are sort of existing services whereby you can, order things from Amazon via crypto, where somebody orders it from their account for you and whatnot. But I assume what you guys have built, there's a sort of dramatic efficiency increase around some of that stuff. I was just curious what some of the kind of key advantages are, the key value propositions to, the sellers via Boson, and I guess also the buyers, the people with crypto, looking to get exposure to looking to buy things rather.
Yeah, I mean the real driving vision of Boson Protocol is that the way things are headed, we're headed towards a world where the entire kind of commerce and last mile supply chain infrastructure is going to be owned and captured by one or few monopolistic, sort of centralized intermediaries, and that's not good for consumers, it's not good for some firms, and it's not good for the economy in general. And we're just going to be continue to be farmed by these centralized entities. So the vision is to create a capture resistant infrastructure upon which we can build and fund an ecosystem of commerce players. So rather than having these sort of monoliths, we have this ecosystem. So of course, for a buyer, there's going to be increased choice, because you're no longer selecting from a closed platform. You've got this liquid digital marketplace for things, and better pricing, because there's less extraction. And then for sellers, likewise, the opportunity to share in the value that they create rather than have that sort of extracted by intermediaries. The Boson is not an application or really even a protocol play. It's an ecosystem play. And so we are raising funds for a D-commerce DAO that will build, fund, and sort of foster this ecosystem on top of Boson.
It sounds like you guys have obviously covered such a huge sort of design surface here, but I'm curious what the kind of hardest design considerations and sort of major friction points that really stuck out for you guys were.
I think, well, it's a huge design surface, and I think that what we've seen is the answer to that is open innovation, right? If you get the incentives to innovate right, I mean, it's like the classic story of, kind of Nokia hiring 1,000 developers to build out all the applications on their phones, and then, Apple building an app store where 1 million developers were incentivized to build. There's just, there's no competition, right? And so, we're not aiming to design this ourselves. It's going to be a win-win with our ecosystem, which is why ecosystem value design is at the heart of what we do. But one thing we've been working very hard on is how we pick our way across this kind of landscape of potential markets that we could build for. And the path that we're picking is initially a focus on NFT art. So there's a real trend and desire for physicals to either, standalone or accompanying NFT art. And so, you know, we've got supply and demand there, and a really quite simple build for us off the back of Boson to connect supply and demand to enable the sort of trustless delivery of physicals via NFT. Art from NFT art. The second one being then gaming. Again, the same sort of tech build for us, the same sort of drivers. And so we, you know, we're signing a lot of partnerships across gaming and building a very specific SDK there. But then, you know, we move, as I mentioned, towards the you know, integrations with DeFi partners, and then eventually on to much larger markets, where there's a requirement to build a lot more tech to bridge into things like rewards programs for centralized exchanges and credit cards, and then eventually to enabling full marketplaces and economies. And I say eventually, I mean, the timelines for this are all pretty aggressive, but and for that, it's, you know, it's about building out this e-commerce stack, some of the core components ourselves. So, you know, one core component is absolutely this last mile dispatch component, and we'll be building one. We'll be building a, you know, we've built a reference app, but then also sort of funding and stimulating the build of lots of other applications, whether that's like a, you know, a connector to Shopify, whether that is, you know, having conversations with teams like, you know, amazing teams like Centrifuge about sort of financing some of these vouchers, etc. So, you know, the more full blown ecosystem play requires a lot of partnerships, and that's what we are fostering.
You mentioned obviously sort of building out the whole ecosystem there. What's the kind of monetization model for you guys behind this? I mean, I know you're doing a token raise, so I assume sort of dominant value accrual goes there, but is there an equity component that, you know, could you give us some color around that?
So, yeah, I mean, the dominant value model is absolutely having the Boson token, which accrues value through two core methods. One is as a minimally extractive fee for coordinating transactions between buyers and sellers. There are also several sort of staking and lockup mechanics. So, for example, if you know, buyers and sellers, you know, put deposits in order as commitments for good behavior, and if those deposits and payments are made in Boson tokens, then fees are reduced. Another really important element of the platform, I mean, is data. So if you look at existing e-commerce platforms, you have these two core sort of functionalities and, I guess, commercial models. One is coordinating the transactions, which we've mentioned, and the other is then monetizing data. So Boson protocol will incentivize buyers and sellers to share commerce data, and then will then, for want of a better word, monetize that data via an integration with Ocean Protocol. Of course, the difference between us and, say, Amazon is that instead of the value from that data being separated from buyers and sellers and going up to Jeff Bezos, that value is recycled within the ecosystem by the Boson token. So really, yeah, I mean, the Boson token accrues value from these two huge value pools, coordinating commerce and monetizing commerce data.
Super interesting, yeah. So you mentioned that you're sort of actively seeking different markets and different projects you could sort of engage with and you know, either get to build on Boson or sort of help them achieve what they're trying to. But what would you say are some of the most exciting projects that are leveraging or building upon Boson in some way? I know it's still early days, but curious what your take on that is.
Absolutely. So we have a number that we will be announcing over the coming weeks in the NFT art space, and also in gaming. Also in terms of iGaming, we have a partnership with Royale Finance, who are supporting that whole iGaming space, where online casinos and iGaming will be able to buy real world items direct from with winnings without touching fiat, which I think is really exciting one. Also, our partnership with Orion Protocol, again, there's sort of three or four elements to that, from the Orion being able to reward their users with real world items, also for their users to be able to buy real world items, and then some really interesting things we're doing with using their market makers price discovery, and some really interesting announcements we're going to make on NFTs with Orion as well. So those are a couple that we're working really closely with that I can talk about now, but we've got literally a couple of partnerships a week that we're planning to release over the coming months.
Awesome. You guys clearly arrived at a pretty interesting approach to NFTs with this idea of sort of stateful NFT vouchers. I know you've touched upon it a bit, but could you elaborate on sort of, how you arrived at that idea? And, I guess I haven't seen ERC-721s used in such a way yet. So basically eager to learn how you sort of arrived at this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's, I mean, my co-founder, Gregor, was sort of my second master's in blockchain. He was the teacher of all the tech and applications, and a lot of those sort of architecture courses. And so we had lots of conversations on pretty out there things about actually what these new tools and objects could be used for. And NFTs, we our analysis of NFTs was that, okay, so this is a unique item. Most items in the world are unique, and now you can have unique digital items. But these items or objects don't, not all real world objects and items are just like static dumb rocks or blocks of things. Often they have structure and state, and they change, right? And the notion that you could, that NFTs are programmable and therefore could hold state, and that could hold logic and SLAs and things like that, that you would usually find sat in contracts and institutions, and that you could take some of those rules and program them, directly into the object, so that the object contained almost, became more smart in a way that, okay, the name smart contract suggests, but actually smart contracts aren't that smart, right? And so that was the kind of origin of where could we put this logic that was necessary to run, to automate these commerce transactions. And NFTs, I think, their history has been these kind of static, relatively dumb objects, but I think we're going to see them as really quite smart, intelligent, interactive objects moving forward.
Really interesting. Given that you're pioneering this concept of, decentralized commerce, what would you say are some of the kind of key trends to watch in the coming years, both for Boson and I guess the idea more broadly as it begins to flourish?
Well, I think if you look at the history of technology, that we typically find that the first few phases of a new technology just really kind of just incrementally improve the prior paradigm. So, for example, with the internet, initially travel agents put a brochure up and said, "Here's our number. We do travel. Pop into the high street." And that was And then what? 5 years later, there were no travel agents. And I think the same with e-commerce and replicating marketplaces and is I think we're going to see the same. But actually, the way Gregor and I see Boson is this: it's a commitment or it's a trust bridge between the metaverse and the universe, right? So if I were to bump into your avatar in Decentraland or somewhere, say Piers, and you said, "Oh, I've got a real world item I'd like to sell you," well, unless I knew you, there's no way I could trust to give you any kind of cryptocurrency in return for this promise of a real world item. It just simply couldn't do it. Well, with Boson protocol, you can. So, you know, it will create a decentralized trust bridge between the metaverse and the universe, meaning that you can have transactions in the metaverse. You can have, you know, decentralized shopping malls and bazaars, and you could go and buy things from people, not having to worry about whether that item was going to be delivered. And also, really importantly, not having to trust some centralized intermediary that, you know, that would assure you that you wouldn't get ripped off by the person selling you this thing in the metaverse bazaar. So for us, you know, Boson is this really fundamental kind of trust bridge between the metaverse and the universe. And the important thing is that it's non-extractionary and, you know, decentralized, which protects from the capture that we've seen with previous paradigms.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, super, super fascinating. It seems like the ability for value to flow seamlessly between the natural and the digital world is a huge step forward. You mentioned the kind of, you know, digital shopping malls there. But what are some of the interesting longer term ideas you've had for how this thing might evolve and what d-commerce could unlock?
Well, I think d-commerce could actually take us perhaps back in terms of the structure of commerce and the economy, from, you know, take us to a place where there is more diversity in terms of, you know, the high street, whether that's the digital high street, or where we're not gravitating towards these sort of single monolithic platforms where even the, you know, the sellers are selling on top of Amazon or Alibaba, but actually it's an infrastructure that just binds together lots of very, very separate and unique sellers and commerce outfits. And so I think that kind of diverse ecosystem is what we hope to bring to pass.
I really like that. Super interesting. Now, you've referenced it already, but to what extent do you subscribe to this idea of a metaverse? And I'll define the metaverse in its truest form as a persistent live digital universe that affords individuals a sense of agency, social presence, and shared spatial awareness, along with the ability to participate in an extensive virtual economy with profound societal impact.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of come philosophically from a view that it's probably quite likely, you know, from this whole simulation theory, that this whole universe that we exist in is a simulation anyway. So perhaps I'm kind of already or been there that this is a metaverse of sorts. I think, you know, it's just, you know, a natural progression of where we are today and where we're heading. I mean, all of our physical items and you know, people that we have today have a kind of digital shadow, and that shadow is becoming more and more real. And I think what we will have is, I think the distinction between a metaverse and a universe will kind of disappear, and it will just be a new reality, right? I mean, in the same way that digital natives don't see digital as something new. It's just another facet of reality. And I think that reality is just becoming clearer and clearer and more intertwined with physical reality.
Mm, absolutely. I mean, I feel like that was a pretty interesting answer, but I was going to ask, given that you're building a pretty cool kind of primitive for this thing's flourishing, what's something unique that you believe about the metaverse that many are either unaware of or would probably disagree with?
Something unique. Well, I think it might not be unique, but I think that there's a strong chance that the whole of reality is actually a you know, some sort of an ancient metaverse, that the universe itself is a simulation that's been running probably amongst, you know, many simulations, and so the metaverse that we're building is really just a kind of a metaverse within a metaverse, if you like.
The idea has always fascinated me. I love the idea of simulation theory. I think Bostrom's an awesome brain. But I'm curious. Obviously, you've got a physics background and whatnot. You know, how you reconcile, you know, us and our simulation capabilities ever increasing. You know, one might speculate that we'll eventually get to the stage where we then become the hosts of a future simulated universe or whatever. Like, how can this reality host something greater than itself or as great as itself? Is that not physically impossible?
I'm not sure. I think that's when you start getting to kind of, you know, arguments about what's the, you know, the maximum extent of, you know, which we could compute within the universe. And I know there's been a lot written on it. One thing that, you know, kind of slightly throwaway kind of comment that I find quite interesting is that, you know, if we are living in a simulation, then we should hope that we're living in a simulation that's run on a blockchain, because in that case, it's immutable. If it's not, then our creators could just rewind any moment and edit it. And that's not the sort of universe I'd like to live in.
I like that. I haven't heard that one yet. That's very good. yeah, all very interesting. We'll see. I'm glad that there's definitely more speculation and interesting commentary around the idea these days anyway. But yeah, we'll see. Time will tell, I suppose. Heading into the kind of closing section, what do you see as the primary path to adoption for this idea of de-commerce?
So, I mean, as I kind of mentioned, the path, the kind of go-to-market path that we're picking really is looking at you know, where there is current demand, and certainly NFT, you know, physical twins of NFT art is one area. In-game items redeemable for physical items is another huge area. We're seeing lots of interest from brands to be able to sell products in game and in metaverse where their users are, and then redeemable. So that you know, that's a really interesting path that we're kind of picking our way along. But then, you know, obviously there's orders of magnitude more customers that are then kind of drinking at the watering hole that are crypto exchanges. So the vast majority of customers that are interested in crypto and want to use crypto actually are not comfortable with private keys and in MetaMask, etc. So, you know, that key to us is then building bridges into these more Web2, Web 2.5 areas such as crypto exchanges, and then beyond that, actually bridging directly into more Web2 experiences. You know, for marketplaces, etc. And I think, you know, it's adoption. The UX challenge is the big one for crypto, and you know, and everyone is aware of that. So, a big part of our strategy is making it as easy to use the technologies built on Boson protocol, and abstracting away a lot of that complexity while still giving people the kind of the choice, the value, convenience, and efficiency that Boson protocol can enable.
Mm. You mentioned you spent a while sort of studying some of these business models being unlocked. I'm curious, across all of the tools afforded by crypto, which kind of type of business models in particular appeal to you the most and you think are the most exciting?
Yeah, so, you know, I studied the platform business model and just network effects business models in general, quite theoretically, but found that actually some of the kind of growth hacking tactics and strategies of people like, you know, Sangeet Chowdhury, etc., were really, really, you know, powerful weapons to disrupt incumbents. And I think combining that toolkit with this new tokenized value flow, tokenized ecosystem, you know, set up at the moment's pretty theoretical, is going to be hugely disruptive. So, you know, if you look at, you know, platforms are essentially closed markets, and you know, we see that in time and again, these sort of open liquid marketplaces and latterly digital marketplaces have really kind of dissolved and outcompeted closed platforms. And so I think, you know, that macro business model of an open sort of liquid digital market is hugely kind of disruptive to platforms. But then there are also just some tactical challenges that just get you time and again when you're building network effects business models. And one is, for example, this kind of bootstrapping problem where, you know, without buyers, there's no point a seller joining, and without sellers, there's no point a buyer joining. And so tokenized systems give you the ability to kind of manually override these gaps by, you know, for example, incentivizing early adopters. And this was, I think, first written about by Chris Dixon when he was talking about how you can use tokens to overcome this kind of utility gap early on and incentivize early adopters. And that is a massive tool in this new toolkit, and one that we use pretty extensively. So, for example, whether that's things like supply farming programs, where you just incentivize people that the earlier they join, when they're bringing quality inventory, they get rewarded. But then also building that into some of the mechanisms that I described, where, you know, you reward curation and early curation. So I think we're just working out. It's like we've been given this new, like, nuclear powered Meccano set, and we're just working out what can be built with it, and it's enormous fun. And so, yeah, for me, being kind of part businessman, entrepreneur, practitioner, and part sort of academic / geek, working with some of these incredible minds to develop some really disruptive strategies with this new toolkit is a real privilege and fascinating.
Very much so. Very excited for you and where you're at, and also equally excited just to be a part of this whole thing. I think most people in crypto are counting their blessings lately. I'm also curious, in terms of investable surface area across, you know, all of crypto, what do you find the most compelling and why?
So, I mean, obviously, the whole e-commerce space, I think is going to be enormous. I think, you know, obviously DeFi, and we'll see that, you know, we're going to see the sort of maturation of DeFi, and I think we're going to see this whole kind of finance eating the world. But I see the infrastructure and the rails that DeFi is creating, and this repurposing of those rails is going to be the trend. So, you know, if you think we are kind of really leveraging the amazing work done by Ocean and Trent on repurposing DeFi for data, and we're now repurposing DeFi for things. And so, you know, not only do you get this kind of conceptual and cognitive kind of advantage of repurposing existing theory, but you get all the infrastructure. But then also, you know, you've now got, you know, which is kind of core to our sort of thesis, but you've now got things, money, and data all in a tokenized format flowing around on the same infrastructure. And so this is just like incredible, right? I mean, people can now come in and, you know, in the same way you've seen this financial composability, you can now, so, you know, so some of the concepts that we, you know, we've been discussing is that, you know, you could, for example, you could take a Boson thing, you could take, you know, a stable coin or some, you know, some cryptocurrency, you could take what Centrifuge is doing with creating decentralized credit. And, you know, you could wrap all these things and you could have a decentralized consumer credit card just by combining smart contracts, for example. right? And so that's got all of those elements of rewards, payment, loyalty, credit. And so what I think we're going to be seeing is this composability of businesses in a way that you saw a little bit in Web2, the way that you've seen increasingly in DeFi, but not constrained to finance applications. And I think this Meccano set, I know everyone uses the term, you know, Lego bricks, but for me, it's now becoming a Meccano set where you've got these, you know, lots of different pieces and lots of sub-modules that are pre-built, right?
What is your favorite video game ever?
My favorite video game ever? Well, it's probably Shogun Total War, which I played and played. I was like the lord of all Japan. And I played and played and played that to such an excessive extent that I actually had to snap the what were they called in those days, CD-ROM in half. Because my girlfriend at the time was at the door with her bags and made me choose between being the sort of shogun of all Japan or having a girlfriend, and I chose her.
Well, I strongly hope you're still with her, otherwise it was hardly worth it.
I'm not, and neither am I a shogun of all Japan, so there you go.
What is the most impactful digital experience you've ever had?
Yeah, I guess the most impactful digital experience, I think the social element of digital. I mean, there's two elements. I spent a couple of years in Hong Kong and just being able to do kind of video, keep in touch with family via video, I think, you know, was enormous then. But now with this COVID that we have, being able to keep in touch with family, via video calls, etc. And these days it's quite a basic digital experience, but I think is an absolute lifeline for so many families worldwide. So for me, that's the kind of the low level basic, but most important digital experience that I've ever had and have continued to have as a sort of lifeline, keeping all of our friends and family together.
Super interesting, that one. I think we often do take it for granted, but it's pretty awesome being able to stay in touch with people all over the globe.
Yeah.
I agree. Finally, out of all the books you've read, which one has resonated with you the most?
Well, yeah, I mean, the book that's resonated with me the most is a book by Hermann Hesse called Siddhartha, which is the journey of a man who's actually, the Buddha through the various stages of his life. It's a book that I've purchased the most. It was actually given to me first by a very good friend of mine when I had a bit of a difficult period towards the end of my teens. And it was a really reflective book about, you know, the journey of through life. And it's also a book that I've bought probably half a dozen times at least for people that are also going through a difficult period and sort of just, you know, sent them this book. And so, yeah, Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse.
Wicked. I think we may have had someone before recommend that book, which is always encouraging. Mm. Well, Justin, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for your time. If people want to follow along, check out what Boson's up to. I know the sort of TGE is upcoming, I think. How should everyone sort of, follow along? Where should they find you?
So our website is bosonprotocol.io, and we're also on Telegram at Boson Protocol.
Once again, really appreciate you coming on, Justin. It's been a super interesting conversation, and really looking forward to seeing how things evolve and hopefully getting involved.
Brilliant. Thanks for having me, Piers.